Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Horde, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth Podcast. Talk to me. All I want is a little conversation. Edition. That's a Kiss song, in case you're wondering, as we check in with head coach Zach Taylor on the Bengals' 8 free agent acquisitions, followed by an hour-long conversation about the draft and free agency, featuring me, my broadcast partner Dave Lapham, and Bengals team reporter Marissa Contepelli. The Bengals Booth Podcast is presented by Prime Sport, the official fan travel and hospitality partner of the Cincinnati Bengals. And here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing. It's the greatest thing since Zoom Happy Hours. During the COVID-19 pandemic, virtual happy hours conducted on Zoom or a similar platform have become very popular. This week, I took part in one with my family members in New York, Indiana, and Colorado. And a couple of weeks ago, my old college buddy, Mike Tirico, yes, that Mike Tirico, organized a Zoom happy hour with 17 friends that went to Syracuse University at roughly the same time and worked in student radio, including Sean McDonough, Ian Eagle, Beth Mowens, and others. I am doing some serious name dropping here. In any case, if you haven't taken part in one yet, I highly recommend the Zoom Happy Hour. Now let's turn to football. On our last podcast, I mentioned that NFL teams were not permitted to discuss free agent acquisitions until they had completed physicals and signed their contracts. The league loosened that policy this week, allowing the Bengals to announce agreements with 8 unrestricted free agents, pending the players passing their physicals at a later date. I spoke to Zach Taylor about the free agent signees, 6 of whom could be starters this year. Zach, was DJ Reader your number one target in free agency?
He was. He was a player that we've thought very highly of from the get-go. You know, Nick Eason has known him since his days in Clemson. And so we felt like he would really help us up front. And it was a long process getting that done, but we were very, very excited to get it done. He's a tremendous player, can really be very flexible up front, play multiple different positions. So really excited to get DJ in the building.
Linebacker seems to be a more pressing need. Why did you zero in on a defensive tackle?
Well, we know that the guys up front take the pressure off those backers, and we feel good that we'll find the solutions there. You know, there's just a lot of areas we wanted to address, and right now we focused on defensive line and corner. We felt like we really helped ourselves there. So we feel like we've made some moves to really help ourselves on defense, and got some guys that really bring some leadership qualities as well, guys that played winning football. And so we're just excited to get back on the field at some point.
Reader's 347 pounds, is an immovable man in the middle the biggest thing you felt you needed to be better against the run?
He's not only very good against the run, but he also brings some pass rushing value there. And when you can find that rare combination of guys who have the size to stop the run in the interior, but also when they're one-on-ones and not just being big, stiff guys that have the flexibility to go get after the passer, create some issues there, then that's something that you've got to try to go obtain. And so very fortunate that we got DJ. Again, we had him at the top of our board. We were very high on him. And for it to all come together is a big win for us.
Let's turn to Trey Waynes. What do you think you're getting in him?
Yeah, you're getting a starting corner. You know, very competitive. You know, he's played in a good system there in Minnesota the last couple of years. Intangibles, he brings a lot of really good things to the table. He's a physical tackler. He's not afraid to put his nose in there, which not every corner is willing to do necessarily. So we're excited to get him in the building. He's fired up to be here. You know, so we felt like that was a great addition for us.
Did you feel like that aspect of being good against the run was needed at the cornerback position?
It helps. You know, it certainly helps. You know, we've got to improve our tackling overall on defense. And so every player we're looking to add, you know, that's an importance for us to continue to stress. But Trey's got good speed. You know, he's made a lot of plays on the balls over the years and played against him a couple times. Always thought very highly of him as a player. So we're just excited to add him to the squad.
I think a lot of us have read that he's a really good, solid player, but maybe has not lived up to being the number 11 overall pick in the draft. Does the contract that you gave him reflect untapped potential?
we feel like he's an ascending player. You know, he's only been in the league here these first couple years there in Minnesota. So certainly feel like his best days are ahead of him. And again, we're excited to add a starting corner to the building.
Then there's Mackenzie Alexander, also from the Vikings, who signed a one-year deal. Does he project as your top slot corner?
He does. Yep, Mackenzie's, again, another guy that's about the right stuff, great intangibles, played a lot of football there in Minnesota. You know, he played with DJ Reader in college. He's played with Trey Waynes, and so he's excited to be a part of what we're building here. And so it was great to get him in the fold as well. So, you know, we've added at two corner positions here, an outside corner, a nickel, an interior defensive lineman. We feel like we're really helping ourselves over there on defense.
Then there's seven-year veteran Xavier Suafilo on the offensive line. Is he immediately the leading candidate to start at right guard?
Yeah, that's exactly right. He's, you know, he's played more in a backup role the last 2 years in Dallas. Really helped them out, you know, when they did have injuries up front, played really well for them. And he's a guy that when you want to watch the tape, you can watch him play against the best competition there is. You can watch him play Chicago and L.A. And he did some really good things for him. You know, the feedback we got on him is that he's a quick learner. He's got a high mental IQ there when it comes to football. And he's a big physical guy, you know, which in this division, that's critical. You know, just having been around it for a year, these interior defensive linemen at these other squads are big guys that are really hard to move in the run game. So to add a big physical guy like Xavier is a huge benefit for us.
That seems to fit the description of guys that Jim Turner likes up front. The bigger, the better, almost.
Well, you know, he's got a lot of good qualities. We've thought he did a great job in pass protection last year, you know, in the games he played for Dallas. And, you know, he's got the athleticism to get to the second level in the run game that we really like as well. So I feel like we're adding a really solid player there.
Zach, you signed Von Bell to a three-year deal. He was a four-year starter for the Saints. Pro Football Focus ranked him as the top run-stopping safety in the NFL. What are you getting in Von Bell?
Yeah, you're getting a really physical safety that's really good in coverage as well. You know, and he's won a lot of football games at Ohio State and the Saints, playing a lot of big games in both places. You know, talked to a lot of people who played with him and coached him, and just the type of person that we want in our locker room. Really excited to get him.
What does his addition mean to Sean Williams?
Well, it allows us to do a lot of fun things, you know, with three really talented safeties. And so, again, that's something that we're continuing to explore, and we'll have a great plan in place.
Bell forced five fumbles last year, which is pretty telling.
He's got a real knack for getting the ball out and making those kind of game-changing plays in that regard. And so, again, we're really fortunate that it worked out where we were able to sign him.
You did eventually add a linebacker and former Baltimore Raven Josh Bynes. He gets a one-year deal. He'll be 31 in August. You saw him twice in a four-game stretch last year. What are you getting in Josh Bynes?
You're getting a tremendous leader, a guy who's been a part of a lot of winning organizations and winning teams. And so, again, just doing the background on him, talking to people who were with him in Detroit and Arizona, you know, just a tremendous person. He's going to make everybody around him better. He's that type of leader that we're looking for. Again, played in a lot of big-time football games, and he knows what it looks like. And so, again, we're excited to add him to that linebacker room.
Does that impact the draft at the linebacker position?
Well, I think we're still open to a lot of different positions, but what we did in free agency allows us to take some really good football players when they're there at the right spot. And, you know, that's really what you want to be doing heading into the draft.
The final two free agents that you signed are cornerback LaShawn Sims. He was with Tennessee the last 4 years. And wide receiver Mike Thomas, who spent four with the Rams. You obviously got to know him face-to-face. Those are two guys that have a lot of special teams experience.
Correct. You know, LaShawn's had a good career there in Tennessee and played against them 2 years ago, 3 years ago when I was with the Rams. Steve Jackson has coached him. So those guys know LaShawn really well, and he's about the right stuff. And, again, going to add great character to the locker room, great special teams value, be a good player for us in the secondary. And then Mike Thomas is a guy that I coached for 2 years in L.A. And, again, just another really solid special teams player. But he's got some traits that are going to be really helpful for us in the receiver room. So look forward to seeing him coming in and compete. I know he's excited about it. And we're just ready to get all those guys in the building.
That's eight free agents. We're approaching $150 million, I think. Are you done?
Well, I don't think you ever say you're done. You know, you always keep those options open in case something pops up. But again, we put ourselves in a good spot heading here to the draft in 2 weeks.
Appreciate the information. Thank you.
You bet, Dan.
Now time for my conversation with Dave Lapham and Marissa Contepelli, which aired live for the first time ever this past Thursday on Bengals.com, the official Bengals app, Facebook, and YouTube. Our first topic, the first pick in the draft, and Dave Lapham was up first. Do you have any doubt at this point that Joe Burrow will be the Bengals' number one overall pick?
I really don't, Dan. I think that Joe Burrow is the target, and I think deservedly so. It's the most incredible one season over another improvement that I've ever seen, that anybody's ever seen. He had the best season in the history of college football for any quarterback, with 60 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. And, you know, I've said it before that when it was most important, the most important games, the SEC championship game, the first round of the playoffs, the national championship game, those 3 games, 16 touchdown passes, rushed for 2 more, didn't turn it over, no fumbles, no interceptions. That's incredible. And he had 7 victories when they played those teams. They were in the top 10. 7 times. So you have the SEC, you have that kind of a schedule. For him to play the way he did, I think, merits, obviously, he won the national championship, won the Heisman Trophy, and he's got great physical attributes. His arm is plenty good enough for the National Football League. It's not like upper echelon, like wowza type arm strength. But I think the thing that separates him above the neck, between the ears, he is a competitive learner. He's one of those guys that's got an insatiable appetite to learn about the game. First one in, last one to leave, like Tom Brady, like Peyton Manning. And he is so confident going into these big games because his preparation is impeccable, and it gives him a tremendous amount of confidence to go out there and execute. And the other thing that he is a dynamic problem solver, you know, and that's when things look easy to, he sees the field so well, and when he reads it and gets it out, great. But then there are going to be times when things aren't so pretty, and he figures out a way to extend a play, to climb the pocket, to manipulate the pocket and solve the problem. You know, his eyes are always down the football field. He's not looking at pass rush and all that sort of thing. So, I mean, you can go on and on and on about Joe Burrow. And I think, you know, it's like when Tom Brady came out of Michigan, he was splitting time at Michigan, 6th-round pick, and then he found himself and peaked. Joe Burrow didn't really have a great year till this senior year, found himself in peak. So hopefully he stays at that level that Tom Brady got to. And Joe Burrow's not a kid. Joe Burrow's 23 years old. He's got some experience in not only football, but in life.
How about you, Marissa? Any doubt that Burrow's going to be the guy?
No, I echo exactly what Dave just went through. And for me, there's really, if the Bengals stay at 1, the only way I don't see it being Joe Burrow is if a trade were to happen. And I really don't see that being the case. I think it would take a lot for the Bengals to move out of that number 1 pick. So I'm the same sentiment as Dave. I think it's Joe Burrow for all the reasons that he just went through and more. There's so much to like with this quarterback prospect. He absolutely, in my opinion, will be the guy of the future for Cincinnati.
And I agree with the two of you. I think this decision was made on November 16th when Tua Tagovailoa injured his hip. And before that, he had ankle problems. So maybe before his injuries, the Bengals would be doing a really hard study of Burrow or Tua. But I think when you factor in the injuries, Burrow becomes the obvious number one overall pick. And I did a deep dive of every quarterback selected number one overall in the Super Bowl era. So we're talking about more than 50 number one overall draft picks. In the first 33, these numbers might be a tiny bit off, but I think I've got it almost exactly right off the top of my head. In the first 33, there were only 9 quarterbacks taken number one overall. But in the last 22 years, 16 of the 22 number one overall picks have been quarterbacks. So when you're in that spot, unfortunately, you're there for a reason in having the number one overall pick. But you, if you've got the opportunity to get your quarterback, a guy that you think can be the next Super Bowl winning quarterback, a guy that can lead your franchise for 10 to 15 seasons, you pounce on it. And I think that's what the Bengals are going to do with Joe Burrow. Lap, you talked about a lot of his strengths. I want each of us to come up with Joe Burrow's number one trait. You can only pick one. The number one trait that you like about him. So, Marissa, you get to go first this time.
Dan, it's really hard to choose just one, but for me, I absolutely love his personality and his approach to the game. He has that leadership and that confidence, and something we even saw after the national championship, and a little bit of swagger to him that I have just been absolutely floored with. He's someone that, when you talk to his teammates, they've rallied around him. He's a guy that people are going to get behind. Everyone has fantastic things to say about his personality and the mentality that he brings. He's been around this game for so long. He's a coach's son, so he knows how to prepare. He knows how to have that approach, and it's really spot on when you look at the way he would prepare over this past season and just how he's improved over the last couple of years. He has the drive. He has that passion, and I really think it's going to be extremely successful translated into the NFL.
All right, Lap, your turn, number one Joe Burrow trait that you like.
I like the path that he had to take to get here. When he was in high school, he was first team All-State, football, basketball, big man on campus, a lot of success, goes to Ohio State, the local legend. Things don't go great for him at Ohio State. He ends up fracturing his hand. And I talked to Luke Fickell down at the Senior Bowl, and Luke Fickell told me a story about when Joe Burrow wasn't the guy, Urban Meyer, when they were scrimmaging against the number one defense, he had number twos and number threes in the huddle, and they're scrimmaging against Ohio State's number one defense, and Urban Meyer saying it's live on the quarterback. And Luke Fickell, that defense was good, and they are lighting him up. They are beating him to death. And Joe Burrow's dad wasn't there. He was coaching defense at Ohio U, but his mom was there. And Luke Fickell said she's in tears. And Luke Fickell goes up to her after the scrimmage and says, you know, it's okay. You know, Urban just wants to go through this. The next weekend, the same thing. And Urban Meyer live lights him up again. And Luke Fickell said, Joe Burrow sold me then, because never complained, never got after any of his teammates, never complained to the coaches, what are you doing? So to me, he's been at the high, he's been at the low. Then he goes and transfers, he gets to the high again. So he's seen every level of success. And when he got knocked off the horse a little bit, he didn't curl over and play dead. He got right back on the horse and rode to stardom again. So I like the path that he's taken. I like everything about Joe Burrow that he had to go through to taste the sweet nectar of success many times, not just once, many times, and the lessons he learned along the way. And I think that's why all of his teammates gravitate toward him. Guys at every level can identify with him, because he's been at all different levels of success. Every single teammate of Joe Burrow's you talk to love the guy, and I think that's a big reason.
All right, I'm going to give you my number one Joe Burrow trait, accuracy. I think it's the most important trait that a quarterback can have. I think it's innate. I don't think you become accurate when you get to the NFL level. I think it's largely a God-given thing, or at least something that's been developed all along up until you get to the point where you'd be an NFL player, and then you either have it or you don't. This is the spirit of 76. The dude completed 76.3% of his passes in the SEC last year. You look at how accurate he was against the toughest defenses, 80% against Alabama in that game. Stayed consistently above 70% against the best defenses that he competed against. I think completion percentage translates to the NFL. I think if you look at guys that played at the highest level in college, their numbers are comparable when they go from college to the NFL. So, again, I think that's the number one trait that a great quarterback has to have, and he has it in spades. And, Lap, you know from rooming with Kenny Anderson, that was the best trait that he had, right?
No question. I mean, put the football in small spots. You know, very, very tight spots. And with that, great quarterbacks that throw with anticipation, normally are straight-A quarterbacks, they throw with accuracy and anticipation. And that gives them even more confidence in throwing it accurately. And the great ones see it before it happens. They can They can anticipate where a guy is going to be open, how he's going to be open, and where to put the football. And with that anticipation, and when they can put it in small holes like these guys can, it's a sight to behold. There's no question. I remember I was working a football camp with Kenny Anderson, and he would, like, I was 25, 30 yards away from him, and he would say, right shoulder, boom, ball would hit my right shoulder. Belly button, boom, ball would hit the belly. I mean, it was unbelievable. It wasn't just, you know, I'm just going to hit you in your upper. He's picking body parts out and throwing the chin, put it right in my chin. I mean, amazing how pinpoint it was. And you're right. Those kind of things, when you can do that at the collegiate level, that trait normally does transfer.
All right, so we all agree that Joe Burrow is going to be the number one overall pick, 99.9% likely that the Bengals select Joe. So let's move to the second round because there's a lot more doubt where that is concerned. We don't know which guys will get selected before the Bengals have their opportunity to choose. We don't know for sure that they will stay in that spot. They could move down. We'll talk about that in just a bit. But I want each of you to give me three candidates on your draft board that you would think that the Bengals would be interested in selecting. Lap will let you go first. Top three candidates at number 33 overall.
Well, you know, I'm thinking that linebacker is going to be, you know, that pick. I really believe that. You know, in my mind, it's linebacker, it's offensive line, and then maybe defensive line in terms of biggest needs. If Kenneth Murray is there from Oklahoma, the big inside linebacker, I'm not sure he will be. 6'3", 240 pounds. He's a run-and-hit guy. He closes on plays exceptionally well. He's an explosive tackler. You know, I'm not sure that he would be there, but if he is, he's somebody that, you know, that I'd love to see. I guess my dream pick would be if Chaisson from LSU, if he slides somehow, you know, if you could get you need the Bud Dupree, the Matt Judon type guy that other people in the division have. If that guy were to somehow slide, you know, that'd be Christmas all day, every day long. Another linebacker that I would, if staying at the linebacker position, another guy that would be great if Patrick Queen, another LSU player, if he were there, I think Patrick Queen would give them, you know, a lot. He's got burst. He's got instincts. He's great in coverage, change of direction. He can blitz. I mean, those are three possibilities. I think Zach Bond is a really good player. But the more people that I talk to, Zach Bond is considered more of a late two, early three. So, boy, if Zach Bond were there, if Zach Bond were there at 65, that dog would hunt all day, every day, and addressing that linebacker position, which I think, you know, the Bengals really need to address.
Marissa, your top three.
So, Lap, I am right there with you. I think linebacker is going to be the pick at 33. I had all those guys you just listed on my list as well, but I might disagree a little bit with Zach Bond. I think if he is there at 33, especially if guys like Kenneth Murray and Patrick Queen are already off the board, I think the Bengals have to move and take a guy because you need someone that can come in right away and be starting alongside Jermaine Pratt. So I have Zach Bond on my list. I also do have a receiver. I have Denzel Mims out of Baylor. I think he is a guy that could really come in year one, learn a lot from the other guys around him and the Tyler Boyd, AJ Green, and then really be explosive and excel in a year or two. So it could be a little bit of a project. You did see him improve quite a bit over his time at Baylor. Did have two seasons where he went over the 1,000 receiving yard mark. And he's really a guy that's unique when he has that size at 6'3", but also has that speed. He ran a 4.38 40 at the combine. I know this is a really deep receiver class, and as we're expected to have a decent amount of receivers go off the board in round one, if he's a guy that's there at 33, that could be a very tantalizing pick. Though I do stick by what I initially said, I do think it will be linebacker first pick in the second round.
Did my 13-year-old son, Sam, share my notes with you two guys? Because you're just stealing my material. I have, in order, Patrick Queen. I choose him from the linebacker group because of his speed and sideline-to-sideline ability. I do think Murray is a great run stopper, but I think Queen might be a better guy in pass coverage, and that's become such a big priority now in the NFL. I favor Queen over Murray. I'm not sure that either one will be there. Right. Zach Bond would be the third linebacker on my list. Of all the wide receivers, I did put down Denzel Mims, A, because I think there's a chance he'll be there, and B, I want a big outside guy. Some people have suggested Justin Jefferson so that you could pair Joe Burrow with one of his favorite targets from LSU, and there's some sense to that, but he's a slot guy. Tyler Boyd is signed long-term. We don't know how much longer A.J. Green will be with the team, at least right now. We'll talk about that in just a bit. Same is true of John Ross. So Denzel Mims intrigues me from the big outside speedy target perspective. I've got two other names written down that you haven't mentioned, and these are cornerbacks. And I'm sure some people are thinking, well, cornerback, suddenly they're deep at cornerback. They've signed Trey Waynes. They've signed Mackenzie Alexander. They still have Will Jackson. They still have Darius Phillips. Well, Will Jackson's going into the last year of his deal. Mackenzie Alexander only signed a one-year deal. You need depth at cornerback. And if you look at the Bengals' history, they've drafted a lot of first-round corners because of how they feel about the importance of the position. So I've written down two names of guys that might be there at the top of the second round, Jalen Johnson from Utah and A.J. Terrell, I'm not sure how he pronounces his last name, from Clemson. I'm intrigued by the cornerback group at the top of the second round if the Bengals hold on to that pick. And let's talk about that now. I think at some point the Bengals are going to trade down for more picks. Marissa, when do you think that will be if you agree that the Bengals do it at some point?
Dan, I'm with you. I do think it will happen at some point in this draft. It's so tough to try to predict something like this. A lot of people have speculated maybe they will trade back out of that spot at 33. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think at that point you still want to take the best player available, especially on the defensive side. I could see it more realistically happening maybe in the third or fourth rounds, potentially fifth, but I'm with you. I do think it'll happen at some point.
Lap, how soon do the Bengals trade down?
What if Jordan Love slides to the second round? What if Jordan Love on the first day does not get drafted and the Bengals are sitting there at 33 and everybody that needs a quarterback is calling the Cincinnati Bengals because Jordan Love is on the board? What if Jerry Jeudy slides? The Bengals probably take him. I agree. I think all these picks we're talking about at 33 could happen. But if we all know, they go by their board. You know, most teams in the league spend a lot of time putting together their top 25, top 50, top 100. And if they have somebody that they had in the middle of the first round, no matter what position you're talking about, other than quarterback, if you take one with the first pick of the draft, you're going to take that guy. So a wide receiver could happen. If one of the offensive tackles, there are four, in my mind, maybe five offensive tackles that are, can't miss kind of guys. If one of those guys slides, you have to think about the offensive tackle. I mean, I think that it's gonna be, who knows how this draft is going to play out. There are a lot of good running backs. If a run on running backs happens in the first round, that's going to be great for the Bengals. Somebody is going to slide to 33 where there are going to be a bunch of teams around the league saying, wow, when I reset my board after day one, holy mackerel, that guy's still there. I got to try to move up to the first pick in the second round to get him. So I think it could happen. I think there's a possibility. And, you know, if you don't have to trade back that far, all these guys we're talking about, if you're at 33 and you feel good that there are four viable options for you there at 33, don't hesitate to move back to 37. You're still going to get one of them, and you're going to get an extra pick. So, you know, unless there's a big disparity between some of these people we're talking about where it's like, oh, I got to take him. He's light years ahead of these other guys. But if you got a bunch, if you got a clump of six guys, you have a clump of eight guys you'd feel good about, move back in a heartbeat. The other thing about, you know, being number one in every round, that's the scenario. Second and third round in day two, they're the first pick in the – and then in day three, first pick in the fourth round. Look at how the Bengals have made moves in the fourth round themselves. First pick in the fourth round has a lot of value. They could be ring again. And the other thing, first pick in the seventh round, I think, is an advantage because you're done with the draft unless you've made trades. Now you can start calling college free agents. You get a jump on everybody else, and it's grab the phones, and it's a recruiting war. And you try to get a kid to commit to you, you know, even before other people are done drafting. So I think having the first pick in the seventh round, depending on how all this plays out, could be a nice advantage as well in terms of college free agency. And, you know, I mean, look at what they've done in college free agency. Vinny Ray, you know, they signed a linebacker that's college free agent originally, and he's 9 years in the NFL. Now he's playing with the Cincinnati Bengals after playing with the Baltimore Ravens and others. So, I mean, you can do damage in college free agency too. It's only seven rounds long. I mean, if the draft back when Tim Cronrod was drafted, 10th round pick, Bob Trumpy, 12th round pick, those guys wouldn't be drafted today. Two of the greatest players in franchise history. That college free agency stuff is important. The Bengals have done a good job at it here lately.
Vontaze Burfict, college free agent.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I have said multiple times on this podcast that I have been predicting that the Bengals would trade down with the top pick of the second round in hopes of getting another high draft pick. I'm going to amend that slightly. I think if one of the top linebackers on their board, and I don't know how they've prioritized these guys, if it's Queen, Murray, Bond, Murray, Queen, Bond, whatever. But if one of the top linebackers, say, number 15 overall on their board slides to the top of the second round, I think they go ahead and take him. Sure. After that, I think it's a real possibility that they'll trade down in the second round. I feel it's really likely that they'll do it in either the second or the third round. So I took a look at the old Jimmy Johnson draft chart to try to see what trading down at the top of the second round would get you. And this really applies to the top of the second round, top of the third round, top of the fourth round. It almost always equates in terms of points to another pick in that round and then a pick in the following round. So if you give up the first pick in the second round, at least according to the point chart, you're going to get a second round pick and a third round pick. Now, I don't know if that's enough unless the second round pick is not a huge drop off and the third round pick is not at the end of the third round. In the third round, I think you're a little bit more flexible. Maybe you would take a middle of the third round, middle of the fourth round kind of guy. I also took a look at all of the teams that have multiple second round picks. Indianapolis does, Houston does, the Bears do, the Ravens do, the Dolphins do. So maybe there's a scenario where you could get two second round picks for the number one overall pick in the second round. That's, I mean, the other team would be giving up a lot in order for that to happen. But if you got that offer, then I think it increases the likelihood that you would give up the first pick in the second round. Lap?
If it were Jordan Love, though, if it were a quarterback that slid, you know, a Christmas deal for the Bengals.
Yeah.
Jordan Love slides to 33. You may be able to get not only picks this year, but next year's draft. You may get next year's second round pick and third round pick along with this year's second round pick if it's further back down, like you said. Like I was saying before, you know, if you have to go down, your point is valid. In my opinion, Dan, the same. I wouldn't make the trade back if there's somebody that you had rated in the middle of the first round, no matter what position, basically, other than quarterback, you'd probably take it with that 33rd pick. But if you were to field calls, I wouldn't go back any further than if I feel good about a handful of guys, don't go back any further than five picks. Don't go back past 38, you know, if you don't get additional picks. So it's interesting. I would field every call, man. I would do my due diligence in every one of them. That's going to be the interesting thing with this Zoom that's going on. How will that retard some of this? A phone call is a phone call. I don't think it should affect trades all that much anyway, because trades are done by phone. You know, teams are calling each other on their phones. I mean, they'll have setup, and that's an interesting dynamic too, because I know right now IT people all around the league are going to various houses of head coaches, owners, general managers. Who has the best Wi-Fi? Who has the best setup? What's going to be ground zero? That's being determined by everybody now. And it's interesting. Everybody's worried about people hacking you know, their systems and everything. And that's a legitimate concern. The other concern is somebody says, oh man, I'm working on a trade, but I need more time. They call, I have a glitch. Something's wrong in my system, you know, just to try to buy more time and be able to consummate the trade. I think a lot of that's going to be tough to police. There's going to be some interesting dynamics through this whole thing as it unfolds on a pick-by-pick basis.
I think you made a good point earlier, though, Lap, in that since the Bengals have the first overall pick in the second round and the first overall pick in the third round, you do have the night to discuss that with other teams. So that's a case where you are not trying to get this done in a short crunch. They'll have the opportunity after the first round is settled for all the teams to look at their boards and then negotiate with anybody that might be interested in making a trade. So I do think having the first pick after a night to think about it is advantageous when it comes to trying to pull off a deal.
Right. I agree. I think other teams, though, if you're, you know, you're all of a sudden somebody makes a trade and moves in a different position and it totally changed the dynamic of the round, then you're calling, seeing if you can. I just wonder how, as it unfolds, and I agree with you, when you have a full 12 hours or whatever to, you know, to set yourself, but during the course of the round, I wonder how it's going to affect. I wonder if there'll be as many trade calls as there have been in the past. It's going to be interesting.
All right. You are listening to and watching our first ever live edition of the Bengals Booth podcast. It is presented by Prime Sport, the official fan travel and hospitality partner of the Cincinnati Bengals. And we will take questions from you before we are finished. Honestly, the easiest way to do that is to send it to me via Twitter. My Twitter handle is Dan_Hord, H-O-A-R-D. Some people have already sent some in. You can continue to do so, and we will get to some questions from our viewers and listeners in just a bit. Let's transition to free agency. The Bengals have obviously made a huge splash in free agency, signing 8 players, spending more than $130 million. That's a new all-time high in franchise history. Marissa, I'll let you go first with this one. Who was the best free agent acquisition, and who do you consider to be the most underrated?
For me, no-brainer, the best acquisition was DJ Reader. He was one of the tops in the league for interior defensive linemen in stopping the run. I believe he was 3rd, according to the Pro Football Focus rankings. You lose a guy like Andrew Billings, you absolutely had to fill that need. They gave him the money. They paid him for a reason. And not only do I love what he brings on the field, but he's one of those guys that Zach Taylor wants to bring in because he's a high character guy. He was the Houston Texans Walter Payton Man of the Year nominee last season. There's a lot in the community, so he's going to be a great asset both on and off the field and in the locker room for this team. My most underrated addition, I'm actually going to go with Mike Thomas, wide receiver from the Rams. He has that relationship with Zach Taylor, worked with him over the course of a couple seasons, so he should be somewhat familiar with the offensive mind and scheme that Zach likes to run. And I think he's going to be a big asset for this team on special teams, especially with losses like Clayton Fedulum and Tony McRae. Mike Thomas comes in as a gunner. He has the speed. He will provide a little bit of depth at the receiver position, though he didn't see much time with the Rams, only had 10 career receptions just 2 a season ago. So he should really be an impact on special teams. We know how important the special teams unit is here in Cincinnati, especially a guy like Darren Simmons. So I am going with Mike Thomas as my most underrated player.
If it was the Saints version of Michael Thomas, it really would have been an underrated pickup. Same questions for you, Lap.
Well, I think the best acquisition, I agree with Marissa, it's almost hard to argue DJ Reader. Paid him over $50 million. He's going to be a 3-down guy, you know, and he's going to be a 3-down guy playing multiple positions. He can play nose tackle if you're lining up in a 3-4. He can play a 1 technique or a 3 technique if you're playing with 4 down linemen. He gives you position versatility. He can even kick out and play some defensive end. He stays on his feet. He chases every play. He penetrates the pocket on the interior. I think he's one of those guys that is going to make life easier for Geno Atkins. And I think it has to be made easier for Geno Atkins. Geno Atkins kind of died on the vine last year physically. Geno is at the stage of his career where, you know, he's maybe a 30-snap-a-game guy now. You know, he's more of a third-down guy. I would make Geno Atkins almost a third-down player now if I can figure out a way to do it. And that's why I think they're going to address the defensive line a little bit in the draft and college free agency as well. But Reader, I think, is going to make life easier. I think Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap, their snaps should be decreased. They're at that stage of their career where they're going to wear down every year if you play too many snaps with those guys. In terms of the player that is the most unsung or whatever, what was your term for it, Dan?
Underrated.
Underrated? Okay. I'm going to say Alexander in the slot, I think, is a big acquisition for them, not only in coverage, but being on the field for like 120 or 140 run snaps, whatever it was, and never missing a tackle. That's big. That was a big, big problem last year. A lot of missed tackles on the perimeter, in the secondary. Plays that shouldn't have been big plays turned into big plays because of missed tackles. The other one I'm going to give an honorable mention to or a second nod would be Josh Bynes, because, to me, what the Bengals, we talked about this before. The first thing you have to do to improve your defense is right up the middle, like in baseball, catcher, shortstop, center field. Catcher's DJ Reader, shortstop Josh Bynes, center field Von Bell. And then they helped right and left field as well, with the cornerbacks. And I mean, they did a great job improving their defense. But Josh Bynes, the linebacker position needs a leader. Josh Bynes has been to the Super Bowl as a college free agent, not drafted. Ninth year in the league, played on playoff teams, played on a Super Bowl team. If I'm a rookie linebacker, I'm listening to this dude. This dude has instantaneous credibility to me. I mean, he's got a resume. He's got some NFL DNA to him. I think he's going to, almost automatically become kind of like the leader of the linebacker room. So I look at that, and like Marissa talked about, and I feel the same way. Zach, it's about culture. I think Josh Bynes will – up the ante culture-wise because of he knows what it's supposed to look like. He played on a Super Bowl team. A lot of these guys have come to the Bengals from playoff teams. They know what it's supposed to look like. They've experienced that kind of success. They knew what they had to do, the sacrifices they had to make to get there. All that builds your culture. So I give him a little nod, too, in terms of culture building.
I agree that the most important and the best free agent acquisition was DJ Reader. It's a no-brainer. 4 years, $53 million. Pro Football Focus's top five rated defensive tackles last year were Aaron Donald. He's good.
He's good.
He's good. Cam Hayward. I know how you feel about him, Lap.
Yep.
Grady Jarrett. Stephon Tuitt. DJ Reader. How about getting a guy from that list?
That's stronger than your rope.
Really strong. He's 26 years old, so you're getting him in his prime. Pro Bowl alternate. Just a tremendous addition. And he was the number one player the Bengals targeted in free agency. I know going into it, a lot of us thought, well, what linebacker are they going to try to sign? And they did try to sign some of the better linebackers available, but they targeted DJ Reader as the number one guy that they wanted to sign, and they were able to get their man, which is saying a lot. And then I would also say in the underrated category, I really like Mackenzie Alexander for a couple of reasons. Number one, I think slot corners are underappreciated in general. NFL teams had three wide receivers on the field last year, 64% of the time. So that slot corner is going to be on the field about two-thirds of the time, depending on your defense. So you got to have a good one. They had a good one in Darqueze Dennard, but he was injury-prone throughout his Bengals tenure. Hopefully, Mackenzie Alexander will be able to stay healthy throughout the course of the season. He did last year, and he did not have a missed tackle all of last year. So, as Lap pointed out, you've got to have corners that can tackle. I think they got a couple of them in Trey Waynes and Mackenzie Alexander. And the value there was great. Unfortunately, it's only a one-year deal, so you may be trying to sign him again at the end of the year. But to get him a really good slot corner for $4 million when Chris Harris is getting $8.5 million as a free agent to play the slot, that's a tremendous addition, in my opinion.
I agree with you, Dan. And back to DJ Reader for a second. Nick Eason deserves a big tip of the cap and a big salute because he was instrumental in recruitment of DJ Reader, being a Clemson grad. DJ Reader, unfortunately, his dad has passed, but he Nick knows the mother exceptionally well, has a relationship there. I mean, he's been friends with that family for quite a while. And there's another guy that basically, you know, a lot of people in the league saying to DJ Reader, why would you go to a 2-14 football team? You know, do you have better options? Jonathan Joseph, former Bengal, teammate Houston Texans. He was supposedly pretty instrumental in DJ Reader's decision. He talked very positively about the Bengals organization, the experience that he had here in the city of Cincinnati, and everything goes along with it. So how about Jonathan and Joseph, J-Jo helping out a little bit?
Let's talk about free agency in general. As I mentioned, the Bengals shelling out more than $130 million. That doesn't even count the franchise tag for A.J. Green of nearly $18 million. Lap, why do you think the Bengals took this unprecedented plunge into free agency?
You know, a lot of fans are going to say, the Reds did it, so the Bengals had to do it. You know, I mean, if they want to compete in the city of Cincinnati, the Reds laid it all on the line, and the coronavirus has upset that apple cart a little bit, unfortunately, for the Reds, and hopefully it won't upset the Bengals apple cart all that much. We'll have to see. But honestly, I think that had to make the improvements. Off a 2-14 season, you had to make improvements. You had to redo and reboot the football team. And I think the other thing is, last year, tough to do because Zach was hired kind of late in the process. His coaching staff came late to the table. So they had to basically evaluate the players that they were going to inherit on the current roster before even getting into free agency. They were just a little late. I mean, it wasn't an easy, smooth thing to get done. The timing of it was just, you know, not there, unfortunately. Now, with a year under their belt and having the 2-14 season, the coaches know exactly what they have and don't have. And I think, they had plenty of time to evaluate the players that played on that 2-14 season for them. And then how about getting the chance to coach in the Senior Bowl? If there's a better year to coach in the Senior Bowl, I don't know when it is. This year is unbelievable to have 60 guys down there from both teams that you were interviewing. One group of players you're practicing with every day and seeing everything about them on and off the field. You're having meetings with the North team whenever you want to and find out about all these players. And it got the coaching staff, like Zach was talking about on his press conference earlier this week, it got the coaching staff in the scouting mode early because they're right there hands-on scouting these guys at the Senior Bowl. The scouts had done it all year long, but now the coaching staff gets a big leg up on it. And here in Cincinnati, the coaches have a big influence in the draft. I don't think it's as big a deal for other teams to be Zooming and all that sort of thing as it is in Cincinnati, because a lot of coaches I talk to around the league, they're not in the draft room. They may get invited in the draft room if their position is going to be drafted. And, okay, we know we're going to draft this receiver. Let's get the receiver coach. He has no influence, but he's just there when the guy's picked to talk to him or whatever. So the Bengals coaching staff is utilized in a different way. So I think for them to get an early start like they did, you know, on the scouting, and, I think that was a huge positive as well. Everything that went along with the Bengals for an advantage in the Senior Bowl is going to be a help. Plus the fact that they had time to evaluate their talent, other free agent talent, and make decisions and spend some dough, and they did it.
Marissa, why do you think they spent so much?
Again, I agree with what Lapp's sentiment is. This team had a number of positions that they needed to improve upon, and that's exactly what they had to do coming out here in free agency, and especially addressing the defense, which they absolutely did with 6 new additions on that side of the ball. Zach Taylor has said, and he told us again yesterday, that this team is committed to winning, and they want to win now. And I think they've done a really nice job of bringing in the pieces that they see fit and that will make that impact immediately. I believe all of us were expecting this type of roster turnover going into year 2 of Zach Taylor and this coaching staff for Lapp, those reasons that you pointed out last year, because the coaching staff was brought in so late into the game. They didn't really get that chance to make as big of an impact in free agency as they would have liked to a year ago. And that commitment to winning and bringing in those guys that you're going to see fit, I really think this was the year that they had to go out and spend money and really show the fan base that we are here. We want to win in 2020.
There's no question they want to fill Paul Brown Stadium again. And we know, we can remember when the jungle was truly rocking, 57 consecutive sellouts at Paul Brown Stadium from 2003 to 2010, 43 consecutive sellouts at Riverfront Stadium from 88 to 92. There are tremendous football fans in Cincinnati. They want to be excited about this team, and I think the free agent expenditures have definitely generated a lot of excitement. I don't think that was the primary motivation, but I do think it helps where that is concerned. I will throw in one other thing. Strike while the iron is hot when you have the flexibility of a starting quarterback in his first contract. So assuming that Joe Burrow's the pick, he's going to get roughly $37 million in the first 4 years of his rookie contract. That's about $9.25 million a year, roughly half of what Andy Dalton was scheduled to make this season. So you're going to have payroll flexibility under the cap for 4 years when Joe Burrow's in his rookie contract, and it's the ideal time to spend money in free agency. So I think the Bengals anticipated that, and as I said, struck while the iron was hot.
I agree, Dan, and I think also free agency is all about recruiting, and it's all about relationships. And like we said earlier, they wanted to bring in guys from winning programs. They want to increase, you know, that atmosphere in the locker room for their culture. So it's culture and it's recruiting connections, culture and connections. Eason, connection with DJ Reader. Zach, coach the receiver. Defensive backfield coach, coach one of the DBs. I mean, it's like they know what these guys are. They've coached they've had them in their meeting room. They've had them on the football field. They've seen what they're like as human beings. So when you have new coaches, you know, it took a year to get it all put together, but they have different tentacles to different organizations and know these guys intimately well. They know better than just reading their stats, you know, off of some kind of a sheet. They know exactly what these people are all about. So I tip my cap to them. I mean, it's not the Cincinnati Bengals, 2-14 record. You know, you look at that, and as teammates, players will say to their teammates, what do you want to go there for? They were 2-14. Cincinnati, what does that city have? It's not New York. It's not Miami. It's not Atlanta. It's not this. It's not that. I'm telling you, I've heard it. I've heard it for many years. I mean, recruiting players to come to Cincinnati, as we know, it's the best kept secret probably in the country. It's a great city, but it does not have the panache that a lot of these other big cities have where players think endorsements, opportunities, all this. So a 2-14 record, and combine that with a small Midwestern city of Cincinnati, that's tough recruiting. And they did it. And they got a lot of key players to commit and to come to Cincinnati. So I tip my cap to them. I think it's a hell of an accomplishment.
All right, a couple more questions from me before we get to questions from our social media followers. Lap, will A.J. Green sign an extension by the deadline, July 15th?
I don't know if he'll sign an extension, but he'll be with the team. I mean, I'd love to see him sign the extension. Hopefully the extension would be less of a salary cap hit than the $18 million tag. But depending on how many years and how big the bonus is and the proration and all that sort of thing, you really don't know. But I will say this. I don't think A.J. Green signing a long-term contract before July 15th or not will have no bearing on if they take a receiver in the draft. I think they take a receiver no matter what. If they feel like that receiver is the best player to take on their board, the A.J. Green situation is a separate deal. They're not commingled. They're not in the same pot whatsoever, in my opinion.
So many great receivers in this draft. Sooner or later, they're going to pounce on at least one. What do you think, Marissa? Deal or no deal by July 15th?
Dan, I'm not optimistic about this. We're in such a unique situation right now, not only across the world in the sports world with this coronavirus pandemic happening. It's just such a different time. We don't know when this is going to end, when the team will be back together. I just think it would be very difficult for a deal to get done by that point. Do the Bengals want it to happen? Absolutely. You want to be able to sign A.J. Green to a long-term deal. I'm just not optimistic that it will get done before July 15th.
I don't know what A.J. Green is asking for. Does he want Julio Jones money? He kind of implied in one of our interview sessions with him late in the year that he wasn't necessarily expecting that. Julio Jones is now the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL, 3 years, $66 million. You can't pay A.J. Green $22 million a year after he hasn't played the last year and a half. Amari Cooper just got $20 million a year. Michael Thomas, $19.25 million. OBJ gets $18 million a year. Tyreek Hill gets $18 million a year. AJ's about to get $17.865 as a franchise-tagged free agent. So is he looking for that kind of money over a three-year deal? My guess is he probably wants something at least near the bottom of the top five. $18 million a year. Are you willing to go that high for somebody that unfortunately has had injuries the last year and a half? I don't know. If he came in a little bit lower than that, I think Michael Evans gets $16 million a year. Would you give A.J. Green that much per year over a three-year deal? Maybe, based on what you think he's still capable of and what he's meant to the franchise. But if he wants, you know, something closer to $20 million a year, unfortunately, I can't take the plunge just because I haven't seen him play for the last year and a half.
Well, and Dan, I was just going to add, not only have you not seen him play in the last year and a half, you don't know exactly how that ankle looks because you don't have an opportunity to get him in the building for OTAs or mini camp, depending on how long this is going to happen and go on.
Well, I saw him up in Cleveland last year warming up. Or doing his workouts with the trainers before the game. He looked like he could help watching that workout, I'll tell you what. And based on that, and I know he's a hell of a lot better now than he was then, and I looked at Bob Bicknell, we were both watching him. I said, are you kidding me? This guy could go out there and help us today against the Cleveland Browns, don't you think? And he's just shaking his head laughing. He is still an elite athlete. I personally think he's going to light it up this year. If he comes back on a franchise tag, he's got unbelievable pride. Every pro athlete does. But A.J. Green is one of these guys that is quiet, but he may be the most prideful player I think I've ever met or in that top category. I think he comes back and lights it up in that franchise tag year, if that's the case.
And I should point out that the Bengals would then be able – conceivably to sign him at the end of the year, but as a franchise tag player, you either get the deal done, an extension done by July 15th, or he has to play out the season before you can try to sign him to an extension. So that's why that July 15th date is significant. One more question from me, then questions from the audience. And Lap, we will direct this question just to you because of your expertise where the topic is concerned. What is your confidence level for this offensive line?
I think that they will address the offensive line somewhere in the draft. Now, in my opinion, looking at the linemen in this draft, the top of the draft, there's four or five really good tackles, and they'll go pretty much in the first round. If one slides to 33, you know, there may be a temptation, but then there's not really any need to do anything until, in the Bengals situation, maybe the fourth round, because they have the first pick of the fourth round. Because I think there are guys like in the third, fourth, and fifth round, but I'm not sure the top of the third round, because that's a late two, basically. But I do have confidence. I think Xavier Fiallo will help this football team. He has a nasty streak about him. I mean, he fits what they're doing with this pin and pull stuff. He's very good. That way, I think he's going to have an impact. I think Fred Johnson, don't forget about Fred Johnson. You know, obviously he came on real strong during the course of at the end of the season, had a couple of starts. You know, I think he's going to be one to monitor for sure. And then obviously, you know, you look at it, Jonah Williams wasn't able to play a snap. And that, Not just the offensive line, but that's what we're talking. Jonah Williams and Xavier, that's 40% of the offensive line. That's two-fifths of it right there. those two guys are projected, penciled in as starters that didn't take a snap for the Cincinnati Bengals last season. And, you know, if I'm an offensive lineman, and this is the way I approached it every year, whether you started the year before or not, unless you're Anthony Munoz and you're a perennial Pro Bowler and you're a future Hall of Famer, you got to think you have to earn your position every single training camp. And I know with Jim Turner as the line coach, that's the way it's going to be. You know, nobody I don't think is going to be ordained necessarily, but potentially you've got two new starters in there. You know, you've got a guy who in a couple of instances I saw get Pro Bowl nod, Trey Hopkins at the center position. Michael Jordan, you know, had his moments, but I think he learned a lot. He's a very young lineman. I think, you know, he's got nowhere to – his arrow is going to go straight up. Fred Johnson, Bobby Hart at the right tackle position. There may be a nice battle there, depending on who and what they draft. There's not a great number of guys at the guard position, particularly early. The guard position I don't think would be drafted until – addressed until very late in the draft. But I have more confidence watching the offensive line and Jim Turner adapt like they did when they were struggling so mightily to run the football, to junk it all and to say, we're going to change our schematic totally. And we're, instead of an inside outside zone team, we're going to be a pin and pull team, and to execute it the way they did and to finish sixth in the NFL in rushing the second half of the season. And then all of a sudden it was easier to pass protect. So, am I saying that it's a premier group? No. Am I saying that that it could be better than people think it might be? Yeah, I am.
It's all about Jonah Williams, isn't it? If he's the guy you thought he was when he was the 11th pick in the draft last year, a lot falls into place.
No question. I mean, you know, you look at this football team, the defense was addressed, but offensively, not just in the offensive line, but Jonah Williams at left tackle, generously Joe Burrow at quarterback, A.J. Green at wide receiver. None of those guys took a snap last year. None of them. Due to injury or being in college. So those are three very important positions on this football team. And they're going to be manned by guys that did not take a single snap last season for the Cincinnati Bengals. It's going to be a different looking offense right there alone.
All right, a few questions from the audience via social media. I probably waited too long to get to these. I apologize, but I imagine we'll be doing this again at some point. And we'll get the hang of the timing for getting to audience questions. I've got a bunch of questions relating to possibly trading down from number one overall. So I'll condense it into a question from B. Burrow, B-U-R-R-E-A-U-X. What would it take for the Bengals to move out of the top spot? Marissa, I'll give this one to you.
Dan, I know I mentioned it briefly towards the top, but I think it's going to take a lot. And I think it's going to be more than someone saying, oh, what if Miami offers their first three rounders this year? If you are that sold on Joe Burrow being your franchise guy, it's going to take a haul. I would say Miami's three first rounders this year plus two additional picks in future years, whether that's two second rounders or potentially even more. It's going to take a lot, and I just don't see it happening.
Lap, is there a price?
I think if Mike Ditka returns, if Mike Ditka would return, possibly, you know, because he was giving up his whole draft for Ricky Williams, but I really don't think so. And if somebody, like I've said this a bunch of times, Miami or whoever else it is, if they're giving up that kind of capital, draft capital, you have to ask yourself, what do they know that we don't? Why are they giving all that up to get the guy that we can get? Why don't we just make it simple? Don't overcomplicate this. We know what we got. Let's draft him.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I was listening to Doug Gottlieb's show the other day, and he was doing this big spiel about how the Bengals have multiple needs and they should trade down and get more picks from Miami. Miami has multiple needs. I mean, why does that apply to the Bengals and not apply to the Dolphins? I can't figure that out when people keep talking about, oh, the Bengals have to trade down and get a bunch of first-round picks. They've got needs. Sure, they've got needs. The Dolphins have needs, too. The number one need is to get the best quarterback available.
Bingo!
yeah, if you've got that opportunity, I think you take advantage of it. All right, our next question comes from Coach K All Day. Excellent Twitter handle. Lap, I'll throw this one your way. How likely is it that the Bengals will sign Will Jackson to an extension?
Well, this is a big year for Will Jackson. You know, the one thing, the fly in the ointment, in my opinion, at this stage in my observation of Will Jackson is lack of ability to find the football. Will Jackson can run, he can cover, but in a lot of instances, he does not find the ball as easily as you think he might be able to. And, you know, that's something that can be taught, can be learned, but it's something that, you know, the real great ones, when they talk about ball skills, not just catching the football, finding the football. And for as much talent as he has not secured the pig very often. I mean, he has the big pick six against Brett Favre, the highlight of his career. But, you know, finding the football, making plays on the football, and then, honestly, like we talked about before, improving that tackling. You know, get people on the ground. You don't necessarily have to blow people up, but get them on the ground. So I think this is a big year for him. And the fact that they addressed cornerback in free agency like they did, and in your model, Dan, if there's a cornerback that slides, they may take it 33 potentially if they do that. If I'm Will Jackson, it's like, bring it. You know what? And competition breeds excellence. And competition should breed excellence. And nobody should be fearful or, you know, afraid of competition. That's what it's all about.
All right. One more question from the audience. And again, this is a compilation of a wide variety of questions people have asked in general terms, what's going to happen to this guy. Others are asking me, will he be traded overnight during the draft between rounds one and two? And the person I'm talking about is Andy Dalton. What is going to happen with Andy Dalton? Marissa, you go first.
Question of the hour, right, Dan? I think it surprised a number of people that he has not been traded to this point, especially with so many different moving quarterbacks that we've seen throughout the league so far. This is a tough one for me because you would like to get value and something out of return instead of just releasing Andy. For the amount of money he's due, I don't think the scenario could play out where they would keep him and have him be a mentor and a backup role to Joe Burrow. I just think he's due way too much money for that scenario to play out. I think it might come to the case where they end up releasing him if something doesn't happen on draft weekend where a team comes in and, you know, you could kind of maybe try to work something out there where they could trade him to a team. But what team would that be? A lot of teams are kind of already set when you look at the quarterback position.
Lap?
Yeah, I think that Andy Dalton was the victim of a glut of quarterbacks in free agency this year, including guys that weren't necessarily free agents, but the GOAT signs with Tampa Bay and Winston's let go. I mean, it's like, and then all free agents that were out there. And so I think he was a tough situation because in order to get Andy Dalton, you have to give up draft capital in the form of draft picks and take on that salary. If you trade for him, you take on that $17.5 million salary. So that's two big things to do when there was such a glut of quarterbacks. And I think Andy got caught in that game of musical chairs and there weren't enough chairs left when the music stopped. And there's still, you know, good quarterbacks out there and Andy being amongst them, you know, and you look at it, Andy Dalton would be a great insurance policy because with the coronavirus and everything, I mean, Andy faced this in 2011 when they had the work stoppage and two leaders, Domantas Pecco and Andrew Whitworth, put together team workouts to get Andy Dalton up to speed and ready for training camp. And Jay Gruden did a great job installing everything with Andy, and they went to the playoffs with a 9-7 record. Will leaders do that, you know, this year with it being such an unusual year? Will Joe Burrow, with that football IQ, be able to absorb the Bengals offense and take it away right away? The value that Andy Dalton has is he knows the system cold. You know, he could install it for Joe Burrow. And would Andy do that for Joe Burrow? You know, all these questions are there. So do you trade him? Well, everybody's waiting for the Bengals to cut him. And after the draft, you know, New England's going to be laying in the weeds, and New England's going to try to get him for, you know, as low a pick as they can if they trade for him. But then I think it would be, we're not going to pick your salary up. So if the Bengals say, we'll keep you, we're not going to pay you $17.5 million, will Andy say, well, then cut me. I'd rather go somewhere else to take a paid cut. I don't want to stay with an organization that I started for a number of years and took the playoffs five times and take a pay cut and be a backup. Let me go somewhere else to do that. So, man, there's all kinds of questions. And how is this going to unfold for the Cincinnati Bengals and Andy Dalton? It is a massive question. There's no doubt. When you look at it, Andy Dalton's salary could offset the franchise tag of A.J. Green almost dollar to dollar. But we'll see.
Look what's still out there. Cam Newton. First pick in the draft, NFL MVP, took his team to the Super Bowl. Jameis Winston, number one pick in the draft, led the NFL in passing yards last year. He did also lead in interceptions and overall giveaways. But still, you're talking about two incredibly talented quarterbacks. Joe Flacco still out there, former Super Bowl MVP. As Lat mentioned, it's musical chairs. There were more chairs. There are more quarterbacks than chairs this year. And I think maybe we are learning what the rest of the NFL thinks of Andy Dalton. Nobody thinks he's bad, I don't think. We all think that he's proven that he can lead a team to the playoffs. Did it five times in a row with the Bengals. But maybe other teams are saying he's good, but he's not great. I think a lot of people probably feel that way about him. And as a result, like you're saying, they don't want to pay him more than $17 million when they see the possibility that he would be cut and then could conceivably be signed for a much lower price as a free agent. So I don't know if the Bengals had offers. I thought that the Bears were a realistic possibility. They chose Nick Foles instead and were willing to give up a fourth-round draft pick for him. But I do think everything seems to be pointing toward Andy ultimately being released and signing as a free agent with somebody else.
The only thing we talked about this before, Dan, is Jay Gruden is down with the Jaguars. Jay Gruden was the first coordinator Andy Dalton had. Great relationship, worked well together. Foles left the Jaguars. I mean, would Jay Gruden say, you know what, if we can get, you know, for a seventh round pick or something, let's see if we can get him, because if he gets waived, you know, will somebody before us pick him up on the waiver wire, or if Bill Belichick's interested.
But he would not be subjected to the waiver process,
He'd be terminated. He'd be terminated. So, yeah, I mean, it's – and you look at it, Jameis Winston, 2011, number one pick in the draft. Andy Dalton, 2011, 33rd pick in the draft. You know, their careers have been very similar. In fact, you know, taking their teams to successes – Cam Newton, obviously, at a higher level to the Super Bowl and MVP and all that. But here they are now at this stage of their careers, coming into the league at the exact same time, being in virtually the same place after doing what they did for their respective franchises. It's crazy.
My watch says that's been an hour. Oh. That went fast. This was fun.
It certainly did.
It did.
All right. We'll do it again sometime. Thank you so much for doing this. We hope everybody that watched and listened enjoyed it. We will try to get to more questions via social media the next time we do one of these live Bengals Booth podcasts. For Lap, for Marissa, and for Seth Tanner, who helped put it together, I'm Dan Horde. We remind you one more time that the Bengals Booth podcast is presented by Prime Sport, the official fan travel and hospitality partner of the Cincinnati Bengals. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll do it again on the Bengals Booth Podcast.